then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush your vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I've heard orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be, in the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more roar for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, switch your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a man big chest was throbbing for the blessed warming light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the man she's lonely crew, and a thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest Homeland, comrades. It's August the 6th, 2015. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. First off, I'd like to welcome three new homecoming migrants this week, a couple here in the Puget area and Comrade James in Idaho. Now, the floodgates aren't opening quite yet, but there are a few leaks in the dam, and they're getting bigger and faster. At some point, the dam's going to burst. Now, moving on to book news. The deadline for ordering any Covington novels you may desire online in the normal way, that's the actual books, the way we've been doing it for 15 years, either the five Northwest novels or any other, is still August the 14th. After that, you will not be able to order my actual books either direct from the old publisher's websites or from Amazon itself, although, as I have mentioned before, some of the alternate sources online seem to have ordered 5 or 10 printed copies to hold in stock, and if you scour the internet, you should be able to find the odd copy here and there for the next several months, at least. I've already had reports of copies being offered for some pretty augmented prices on eBay as word gets out of the impending publication ban. I will say again that steps are being taken to make sure that my books, especially the five Northwest novels, remain available to anyone who wishes to read them. Realistically, this is going to mean a lot of people, at least in the first year or so after the ban, will probably have to reconcile themselves to reading their Covington novels in electronic form, PDF format, downloaded or read off websites, so forth and so on. The project for getting the works back into physical print is ongoing, and it will eventually make it possible for interested parties to obtain proper printed books that can be held in the hand, although we have difficulties here in the form of my own personal time and eventually of money as well, since obviously a book costs more to produce than a PDF copy costs to email. I do not as yet know whether or not we're going to try for formal publication again through another publishing company, possibly an overseas one. On July the 15th, I lost 15 years worth of work simply because some faceless and unknown person in a carpeted and air-conditioned office made a call to someone else in a carpeted and air-conditioned office. Obviously, one consideration in whatever republication program we enter into has to be that if I simply pick some other print-per-order publisher, there is nothing to stop said faceless and unknown person or someone like him or her from just making another telephone call to the new publisher 6 months or a year down the road. After, of course, I have spent oodles of your money to get the new editions published. I deeply appreciate the many helpful suggestions that a lot of you guys out there have made regarding possible solutions to this problem. Every one of them will be examined, and we may end up adopting some of them. That said, every cloud has a silver lining, and the silver lining here is that I'm going to be able to do one last and hopefully final proofread of these books to get rid of most, if not all, of those annoying little typos and misspellings that many of you have noticed down through the years. I'm actually beginning this process right now with A Mighty Fortress, which for some reason was really riddled with some pretty glaring typos. I think this may have had something to do with some health issues that I was having at the time. I was proofing it all those years ago. But for whatever reason, I now have a proofreading team or committee working on it, and as always, I'm astounded at the typos not only that I missed, but that all of these other people miss only to have them caught by other readers on the team. So hopefully between this half dozen or so new sets of eyes, we'll be able to really clean up Mighty Fortress, which I'm glad to see happening because in some ways, AMF is my favorite. Okay, now I'm going to do another segment of the ever-popular Quis Custodiet Ipsos Custodes, or Who Guards the Guardians? Before I do, however, I want to make something clear. Now, the source I have for this particular item is not only anonymous, I'm not sure it's completely reliable. There is a possibility that I am being punked or trolled or pranked here, and I thought a lot about whether I was even going to mention this at all, and I've decided to go ahead with the preceding qualifier, because somehow it just sounds right to me. It has a ring of authenticity. So, with that caveat.
There's a man who leads a life of danger. Everyone he meets, he stares a stranger. Read every move he makes, another chance he takes. Odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man, they've given you a number and taken away your name.
First off, a little background. This may seem a little digressive, but bear with me, it does have a point. In 1976, a retired FBI special agent named Joseph L. Schott published a kind of memoir of his many years in the Bureau entitled No Left Turns. It's now out of print, which I can kind of understand, since it didn't exactly make the writer popular with his former employers. I read it many years ago, and it had some interesting and funny insights into what the Bureau was like during the J. Edgar Hoover days. Now, you should bear in mind that this is before a lot of the stuff about Hoover that later came out was officially known. Now, I don't mean his alternative lifestyle with Clyde Tolson. I mean, geez Louise, that was one of the most open secrets in Washington, D.C. for years. It's just that everyone was so terrified of Hoover and his vast stash of secret blackmail files that even the most liberal of media didn't dare to mention it. I mean stuff like Hoover's secret identity as Mary, and his habit of throwing little select gatherings in his basement rec room where everybody in his inner circle got drunk and then J. Edgar would open his private safe and play them all surveillance tapes of Eleanor Roosevelt's interracial lesbo encounters with Hattie McDaniel in New York hotel rooms, that kind of stuff. But, however bizarre his own sexual activities and fascinations were, Hoover always demanded the most rigid, straight-up beaver-cleaver-style personal morality from his agents. He was the ultimate do-as-I-say-and-not-as-I-do kind of boss. And if an agent was caught having an affair or patronizing a prostitute, he was in deep, deep doo-doo. Now, this book, No Left Turns, recounted an incident in some local FBI office, I can't remember where since it's been over 3 decades since I last read the book. Back in the 1960s, an FBI agent was getting married, and for some reason, the other agents decided to throw his bachelor party in the office after hours. As entertainment, they hired a stripper. A black stripper. Now, God knows why these guys thought they could get away with it, because Hoover was well known for his network of informers in his own organization, and he had an eye and an ear in every field office. So, needless to say, Hoover heard about it the next day, and the way former agent Schott describes it in his book, Hoover damn near went into orbit. He flew out to this field office that night, and the next morning, he storms in and calls everybody together in some conference room and closes the doors, and he really lets them have it with both barrels. Now, I remind you, it's been many years since I read this, but as nearly as I can recall, Schott reported something like, "Gentlemen, I am deeply grieved to inform you that it has come to my notice that several nights ago, here in this office of the world's foremost law enforcement agency, which we all serve, an unseemly and disgraceful revelry took place. Alcoholic beverages were served, neckties were loosened and even removed. But that is not the worst, gentlemen. To my astonishment and dismay, this shameful debauch culminated in undulations to music from a phonograph record by a negress. A naked negress, gentlemen. Now let me make something absolutely clear to you men. Never again will there be any naked negresses in my FBI. Do you read me? No more naked negresses. Needless to say, the title of that chapter in the book was No Naked Negresses. Now, when today I read about the kind of things that go on in this bestial secret police agency, which has become an instrument of the most vile and bloody tyranny in human history after the regimes of Stalin and Mao Zedong, when I hear of FBI agents plotting to murder their ex-wives' lesbian lovers and trying to rape their female subordinates in the FBI lab committing massive and organized perjury for decades, which, among other things, led to the execution of 14 innocent men. Anyway, when I read of these things, I recall this story as a kind of a sign of lost innocence, when the director could get so completely freaked out by a lapse which today would pass unnoticed. Hell, today the special agent in charge would probably pick up the tab for the stripper on the taxpayer's dime. And to give him his due, pervert and damaged individual though he was, I believe J. Edgar Hoover would be sickened and ashamed at what his agency has become. I thought of this story when I got a mystery communication from an anonymous source a few days ago, and let me say again, I do not vouch for the authenticity of this, and I might be getting punked. But somehow it just rings true. I have referred in the past to the unquestioned fact that the FBI regularly monitors these Radio Free Northwest podcasts. Now, back in June, when I did my short episode on the Dylan Roof incident, what I refer to as the Charleston Vespers, I made it clear that I don't want any of you people out there doing this kind of suicidal shenanigan, and in order to make my point, I made up a little Dr. Seuss parody rhyme to try and make my position entirely clear, which I will not repeat here. Apparently, the FBI agents officially assigned to monitor and report on these podcasts are not the only ones who do so. And I have developed a kind of unofficial audience in the Bureau of agents who listen in for whatever personal reasons of their own all over the country. I have no idea of what these agents' motivation or racial and gender composition could be, and I will not speculate any further on that. But apparently, some of them, presumably white agents, found my little Dr. Seuss parody to be screamingly funny. It has allegedly been recorded in excerpt and bounced all over the FBI internet by audio attachment, and from there to God knows where. There was supposedly an incident where an FBI agent, presumably white, went up to one of his African-American colleagues, put his hand on his shoulder, and said, "I will not shoot you on a boat. I will not shoot you in a moat." Or some quote from the rhyme, which of course left the monkoid completely mystified.
"Say what, motherfucker?"
I have this vision of some senior supervisor sitting in a carpeted and air-conditioned office in the J. Edgar Building in D.C., hearing of this. Probably some affirmative action power woman with a 2x4 up her ass. Maybe even a power woman of color. And going through the roof like J. Edgar Hoover did regarding the Naked Negress incident and initiating all kinds of OPR investigations and polygraph tests and interrogations and ritual humiliations of white male agents, so forth and so on. Now, you guys who dared to make a politically incorrect joke may be about to get a little taste of the horror that you have been helping to inflict on the rest of us for so many years. A taste of what Obama's America does to stroppy white boys whose minds clearly are not under control. Justice in this society may be a rare thing, thanks largely to you and your agency. But sometimes it can be both poetic and ironic.
Secret agent man, secret agent man, they've given you a number, all they've taken away.
This is Jillian Welch.
There were two sisters of County Clare. Oh, the wind and the rain. One was dark and the other was fair. Oh, the dreadful wind and rain. And they both had love of the miller's son. Oh, the wind and the rain. But he was fond of the fairer one, oh, the dreadful wind and rain. So she pushed her into the river to drown, oh, the wind and the rain. And while floated down all the dreadful wind and rain. There she floated till she came to the miller's pond. Oh, the wind and the rain. Dead on the water like a golden swan. Oh, the dreadful wind and rain. And she came to rest on the riverside. Oh, the wind and the rain. And her bones were washed by the rolling tide. Oh, the dreadful wind and rain. Then along the road came a fiddler fair. Oh, the wind and the rain. And found her bones just a-lying there. Cried, oh, the dreadful wind and rain. So he made a fiddle peg of her long finger bone. Oh, the wind and the rain. He made a fiddle peg of her long finger bone. Cried, oh, dreadful wind and rain. And he strung his fiddle bow with her long yellow hair. Oh, the wind and the rain. He strung his fiddle bow with her long yellow hair. Cried, oh, the dreadful wind and rain. And he made a fiddle fiddle of her breastbone. Oh, and the rain. He made a fiddle fiddle of her breastbone. Cried, oh, the dreadful wind and rain. But the only tune that the fiddle would play was, oh, the wind and the rain. The only tune that the fiddle would play was, oh, the dreadful wind and rain.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland. This is Stefan.
And Annie.
And we are overlooking the Olympic Mountains and the late summer pine forest and everything else that's here. Fruit trees are in full swing and...
Yeah, it is so beautiful. We came up at exactly the right time of year.
Yeah. This week, we want to talk about something that I've been thinking about for a while, and it's a very important issue. It's the most important issue for understanding exactly what is happening in this country.
And why you should be coming here.
Yes. I mean, it all relates to that in some way, and this does for sure. Here's the thing. What is going on now is there is an anti-white religion, an anti-white theology is what I call it. And this is something that used to be on the fringe liberal left 30 years ago even, or even less than that, 25 years ago. People had these views and people laughed and, oh, come on, that's just a few weirdos that think stuff like that.
Right, just like Caitlyn Jenner. Who would have thought that 15 years ago? I wouldn't have thought that would have been normal, but it's normal now.
Not for me. It'll never be normal for me.
Right.
But I had a theology course in college once, and the instructor defined theology as a worldview. And a worldview is just a way of looking at the world. And this is what we have now. We have basically a religion. And the funny thing about this is they accuse us of hate, but they hate us. There's nothing more than the leftists hate than a hater. Think about that. But what used to be a leftist view of white people is turning into a state religion now. And you have not just a federal government, now you got the state government. And it's even filtering down lower than that, where the government is instituting all kinds of things that put us in the back of the line.
It's brainwashing.
Yeah, that push everybody else ahead. And they might as well have anything but white on a job application. You could just exclude us, then you don't have to have all those other rules.
Right. Well, then it has to be in fighting between the two of them, or the three, or whatever the other races are.
But anyway, every aspect of American life really involves indoctrination into this religion, which is what it is. And this religion has its key principles, like whites have a shameful history. They have a history of slavery, not being slaves, although that has happened. That's not what they're talking about. We have enslaved other people, and we plundered the world's resources, colonized indigenous peoples, destroyed their cultures. We invented terrible weapons like gunpowder and nuclear weapons and things like that. We used these things on other people, other cultures, and other races. This is the kind of thing. We subjugated women, stole land from the Indians and from other people in the world. This is how they think of us. We are terrible as a race because of this, and they got to do something about it. And they are doing something.
But it's okay for Spics to be bringing diseases that we had eradicated across the border. It's okay for niggers to be killing whites and all the black-on-white crime. It's okay for the Indians to not pay their fair share of taxes because they're on a reservation. Their rules are different. It's okay for everybody else to do what they need to do except for white folks.
That's right. And it's okay that they use all our technology and our social structures, everything that we've built in the society. That's okay for them to have that. They're going to take all the stuff that we invented and then use it for themselves. And then,
well, Stefan, they would have thought of it first. We would have thought of that.
Well, you know what?
Whitey hadn't have done it.
Well, they say that, and this is what I've heard. When you've been in a university full of leftists long enough, you hear stuff. This is what they say on that issue. They say that they would have learned those things. We had the advantage because we lived in a part of the world that made us think of these things first. And they would have eventually came around to that way of thinking. And it was cold and stuff like that. And besides, in our nature, we were more warlike. We were more violent and things like that. We weren't like peaceful, tropical people living in the sun, laying around and picking fruit off of trees and just, you know, enjoying life. We were up there
even respond.
In the cold north thinking of ways to kill the next guy and take his stuff. And we found iron that was nearby. And what an advantage that was over the guy with the bronze sword. And then, well, come on, the Chinese had gunpowder first, but they just couldn't figure out how to put it into a rifle and all that. Well, that's because they're not as violent as us. That's the first thing we thought of when we found gunpowder. Well, how are we going to kill somebody with it? Not make beautiful fireworks like the Chinese were doing and things like that. But anyway, let's get on with this.
Sorry.
White culture has to be ridiculed as part of this religion that they have, too. White solidarity has to be smashed with race mixing and propaganda on TV. Everywhere you look in entertainment, it's infested with this view. Laws insert non-whites into every place where we live and work. Places where I used to live, I can't say specifically where, but we had ethnic neighborhoods, Polish, Italian, Slovak, and things like that. Those were the last places where whites lived in urban areas in this country, at least over there. And what did they have to do? They weren't satisfied with the rest of the city becoming a ghetto. They wanted to insert Negroes into, well, it wasn't fair. We had better schools and all that. They had to put Negroes in our schools. They had to pass laws and put the real estate agents in jail because they didn't want to sell the houses to blacks and all this. So the other thing that they've done is the money and the property and the social structures that uphold white dominance. This is Obama's thing. This is what he is trying to do on steroids compared to what the liberals were dreaming about 30 or 40 years ago. The tax code, affirmative action, and environmental laws. And now he wants to take tax money from these exurbs and these outlying areas and funnel them into the ghettos because it's not fair.
Right. He just... It's hard for me to even comment on that because it makes me so angry. I'm at a loss.
Miss Annie is speechless.
Well, here's the thing is, Stefan and I grew up very different. He talks about the ethnic neighborhoods. I grew up on the side of the city that had the ghettos, more ghettos than not. So I've seen this firsthand and I've lived it firsthand.
She had to put up with them longer than I had to. When I was a little boy, you just didn't see them unless you drove someplace far away. They were a spectacle if they came where we were. I mean, they acted funny and looked funny, and the parents were afraid of them and stuff like that. Don't go by them. And anyway, back to this religion thing. They have their own saints. They have Martin Luther King, Anne Frank, Rosa Parks. They want to tear down Nathan Bedford Forrest, Jefferson Davis, and all the Confederates. In fact, those guys are the devils.
Right. And those Washington high schools in your town, they're probably Booker T. Washington high schools. They're not.
Right. They changed the names of some of them.
Yeah, they are.
They changed the names of a lot of them. We didn't have those in the North. We didn't have the Confederate heroes in that. But if you go in some of these cities, you see streets named after with ethnic names on them and stuff like that. But Hitler is the ultimate devil. Anybody that's a racist, and now that definition or the people that fit that definition is expanding like crazy now. We are like the new Satanists to them. We are the most evil kind of people.
It's okay to be prejudiced against white people. That's the only prejudice that really is allowed.
If they could burn us at the stake and get away with it, they would do it. Just like it was done to, allegedly, that Christians did to others in like the 13th century. Well, to accomplish their goals with this religion, they turn our own kids against us, and they've been succeeding with a lot of our kids.
In high schools, you can have every club that you want to other than a white club.
Right. Try doing that and you see what happens. They start very young with the indoctrination, the propaganda, and this is to make white kids hate their history and their culture. They're taught that black culture and brown culture and every other culture, Arabic, everything else, is more superior, is more ethical, and they're taught that we were the bad guys. I'm seeing white politicians from the South that are Republicans. We've seen them openly reject the Confederate flag, and now they're turning their backs on the heroes of the South. And Martin Luther King is now who they glorify, the plagiarist. And he's not even one of their people. This is what's going on. The aim of this is to get rid of us because we're smarter, more resourceful and disciplined and more beautiful than the other races. Therefore, they have envy. And just by being ourselves, they hate us just because we're ourselves. That's what we must understand. They hate us just because of who we are. And isn't that what they accuse us of doing?
Right. You think about the liberals who are all about giving Blackie a chance, but
they say,
if they said nigger 10 years ago, they get called out and they're a racist now and their little group turns on them.
The exact thing that they accuse us of is what they are doing to us. And that's my point. And I'm going to say it. They want to eliminate us from the face of the earth. It's genocide. That's what it is.
You can't say it's some big conspiracy. It's just, it's the way things are moving. That's exactly what they want. And they, who is they? A large majority of the Spics coming across that border and the niggers. Talk about that.
Well, here's the thing. It's filtered down. The freaks of the 70s and 60s, 70s and 80s that had these weird ideas. The leftists and Jews in the institutions and the highest elite institutions that had these ideas originally, this stuff is passed down and they were on a crusade with this and that's what it is. It's a religious crusade against us. And once they got these ideas, they were not going to stop. And they pushed and they pushed and they pushed and they little by little, they chipped away. They chipped away. They knew that each generation of kids was going to be a little more receptive to the idea. Who cares? The old ones are going to die off eventually. And then we'll have this new bunch in. And then we'll push more on the next generation. And that's what they've been doing. And when you bring foreigners in, all the better. They don't even know what happened before. They don't give a... Mexicans...
All they want is just... They have their come in with their hand out and...
Mexicans, Chinese, Arabs, Indians could care less. They don't know anything other than how it benefits them.
If they're so much damn better, why do they have to come here to be whatever it is?
They don't care about the United States, the Constitution, what it was founded upon. They don't care about our language. They don't care about our religion. They don't care about our traditions.
They're like cockroaches.
Right. And I'm not saying all these people are criminals. I do agree that Trump says that they're not all like that. But this is not their country. They can stay down there. It's genocide, and they don't want to talk about the murders that are committed against us by the non-whites, and that's like an outrageously disproportionate percentage that they commit against us than we commit against them. It's like not even close. And the abortions that have killed white babies, that is a crime in itself, the way they've been able to get away with that. And then now we have other ways that the genocide is being committed is when every time somebody has sex with a non-white, that does it. That doesn't produce a white person. That produces somebody else. And then if a lady doesn't have a baby or a couple because it's too expensive or it's too much inconvenience and they want to have fun and stuff, that's the same thing. We don't have six kid families anymore or five or four.
Right.
We have one or two or three. If somebody's got a lot of money and they like kids, they might have a couple kids. But for the most part, they don't anymore. It's like one in Europe, it's like one kid maybe.
And you're certainly going to run out of kids real soon if you keep promoting this faggotry.
Right. That's a whole other thing.
Think about that.
That's a whole other thing, too.
It's another podcast.
There is something to do about that.
Okay. So what do we do about that? If we're sick of seeing that in our country, what do we do?
You come here to the Pacific Northwest. Now, I understand there may be some other areas that are like this, in the Dakotas, perhaps, or maybe somewhere else. I think this is the best chance of this area because we have a large population. We have all the resources here.
There are a lot of folks out here. And talk about resources. We've got things to survive with. We've got a port. And all this has gone into in the books if you read the series.
Right.
That Harold has put out. By the way, if you have not gotten a copy of any of those books, you need to do so soon and check the forum and you'll get more information about that as his books have been banned.
Yeah, that's part of this too. That's,
right.
That's
awesome. Right. But we do have the resources here is what we're trying to point out. And that's why this is the best place to come.
There's people here and an infrastructure here that when everything falls apart, this is where you want to be. You want to be someplace like this. Probably here.
Right. You don't want to be in the white section of town surrounded by the ghetto and the Spics and their EBT cards don't work. Where do you think they're going to come? They're going to come to your big, nice house.
You can have all the AR-15s you want in your little gated community in suburban Atlanta or wherever it is. But what happens when there are millions of hungry Negroes and Spics?
And Mexicans.
Right. It's just you will exhaust your ammunition and they are still going to come there and get you. Unless you have an organized army, which, I mean, I don't see how that's going to happen. Well, you don't have an organized army in the Northwest. No, maybe not. But we have enough of us here to defend ourselves should something like that happen. And we have a community of people, not just in one little area.
Right. And we all think the same and we talk about it, not about going out and killing everybody. But we talk about how our views are the same and how we want to be around white people. And we want our kids to grow up and marry white kids and have white kids. So
we want to have a community here that is ready for this collapse that's going to come eventually, if not in our lifetime, then certainly soon afterward. That way we have a chance to survive here on this continent. The only other place in the world that might survive is Russia. And in that area, you know, God help them over there. I hope they can do something there too. But this is the only place for us on this continent, I believe. If you don't believe this, there's scholarly books on this subject. One of the best ones is a little bit dated now. It's called America Balkanized by Nelson. Dr. Brent Nelson, who's wrote on this subject for a long time, on these demographics and how it's going to play out in the future, based on looking at other places in the world where things like this have happened, where people didn't speak the same language or have the same values and things like that, and other nations have broke up, Yugoslavia being one good example, where, by the way, they were all the same race. It's even worse when they're not the same race. Anyway, that's about all we have time for today. Any last words on that? Any thoughts?
One thing that we're always encouraging folks to come up here, and why is that? You know what? We're not going to have any more children. Just because...
Too late.
We've already had children, and we're kind of done with that. I wish I'd have more. I wish I had the foresight to see what was going to happen. So why are we pushing for people to come up here? Why do we want you up here? Because we want the white race to continue. We want our children to have a place that they can come to. That's what it's all about. And there are a lot of us up here already. It just amazes me how many of us there are already. And I was quite surprised to find that. And I'm really excited about that. But just so you know what our motives are, we're selfish in wanting the white race to continue because we do have children that we don't want to marry niggers and Spics and everything else. And I don't want to, well, I'm not ever going to be the grandma that carries a little giglet around. Just not going to do that. So
you and millions of others are thinking that exact thing. All right. We've got some new folks that we're going to welcome up here, and we're looking forward to that. Get together soon, I think, with the other folks.
Right. And lots of people coming over 3,000 miles.
That's
right. We did that over 3,000 miles ourselves. You can do it.
All right.
You know, in addition to being racists and homophobes and general bigots and anti-Semites and horrible people, etc., etc., white nationalists are also supposed to be misogynists. I personally disagree with that, but every now and then I'll just say, what the hell? This is a group called Rebel Sun.
This here is the story of a funny little woman. She sure is a sight to see. None of the screws inside her skull are quite as tight as they should be. So now she lives in the loony bin, so she can't cause no harm. And they call her Queen Sarah Jean, Queen of the Funny Farm. Sarah Jean was a fucking psychological wreck, so she went and checked herself into her local loony bin, so she could get her some help. And they say there's some fucked up women there, but she's the worst they've ever seen. So they held them a Looney Tune pageant and they crowned her Sarah Jean, the Nut House Queen. She is the epitome of insanity. She's a fucking nut, but so what? She's fruitcake royalty. But bless her lonesome little Looney Tune heart, she'll never have her a king. But oh well, all hail her highness, Sarah Jean, the Nut House Queen. Sarah Jean sure loves her palace, she's so proud of her home. She's either bouncing off her padded walls, or she's strapped down to her throne. She's lost all of her marbles, but she's still the happiest little thing. Cause she loves all of the attention, Sarah Jean, the Nut House Queen. So if you're ever out and about on the outskirts of town, stop by the old asylum and look for the little lady wearing the crown. She sure is something else. You'll beat all you've ever seen. Go see the Looney Tune legend for yourself, Sarah Jean, the Nut House Queen. She is the epitome of insanity. She's a fucking nut, but so what? She's fruitcake royalty. But bless her lonesome little Looney Tune heart, she'll never have her a king. But oh well, all hail her highness, Sarah Jean, the Nut House Queen. All hail her highness, Sarah Jean, the Nut House Queen. Long live the Queen.
Greetings, comrades. This is the trucker coming at you from North Dakota. On my way over to Virginia, and a little background on myself. As I may have mentioned in past episodes, I've got more of a mechanical background. Don't mind getting my hands dirty. Not as well spoken as Andy is, and I won't bore you with my reading background and stuff. It's mainly technical manuals, so I'll let Gretchen take care of the philosophy and other books and stuff, but most all of us operate vehicles that are run on some kind of petroleum-based fuel, be it gasoline or diesel fuel. So this is kind of in terms that you might be able to understand. You know, you got different octanes of gasoline and stuff, but what happens if you go and get some water in your gas? Well, you have to put an additive in there to help soak up the water, or you go and pop the drain plug on your fuel tank and drain the crappy part of the fuel out. Some of you, hopefully most of you, are familiar with painting, like painting a house, room, hallway, a wall, whatever. All right, you go to the store and you go to buy some paint, but you want a colored paint. Most of the time when you go to the store and buy the paint, you pop the lid off of just about any can of paint, be it oil-based or water-based paint, latex, whatever, indoor, outdoor. You pop the lid off of it, and holy shit, the paint is white, and they have to add some kind of pigment or coloration to the paint to get the color you want. But rarely ever do you see paint that's already colored. But how do you get that paint back to white if you want white paint? Well, you don't. I have yet to see the pigmentation to go and change brown paint back to white paint, or yellow paint back to white paint. Just about, I mean, the paint starts out white. and they put some coloration in it to get a different color out of it. Hey, isn't the same way with us? Wow, that's a revelation, isn't it? That's a good reason to not race mix. If you want to keep the white race white, come to the white homeland, where we are trying to eliminate all the pigments out of the population and have it all white, so we don't have to worry about the problems that are occurring in the formerly great United States of America. It's not so great anymore because you've got all the monkeys running wild. Their latest kick, I guess, now is the Confederate flag. And I just saw a post yesterday where some monkey on a motorcycle went and ripped the Confederate flag off of a white guy's big old 2500 pickup. I'm not sure the brand, but that's inconsequential. But old white boy got pissed off at the nigger that ripped the flag off of his truck and chased him down and ran his ass over and killed him. So now poor old white boy has been arrested and is being charged with manslaughter. Well, actually it should be monkey slaughter, but hey, whatever. So, what's stopping you all from getting up here to the homeland and removing the pigmentation from the homeland? Well, that's my little piece for view from the road from the trucker today. So, have a good one, comrades, and hope to see you all up here in the homeland soon. Be safe, and watch out for the monkeys. Greetings, comrades. This is the trucker, and I was going to go and touch on gun control and gun-free zones. Me personally, I'm not sure about your all's opinion on it, but I am all for gun control. You heard that right. What I mean by that is, unless you're a restricted person, you ought to be in control of a gun, at least one, within reach or on your person at all times. As far as gun-free zones, they are nothing but victim zones or killing zones, and I don't think we should have any around, period. There should be no areas where you should be restricted from being able to possess your firearm for self-protection. I guess the exception to that currently is like courthouses and stuff, but they have usually the sheriff's department or something like that are playing armed security, and they have metal detectors to prevent people from bringing weapons in. So, yeah, everybody would be disarmed except for the sheriff's department and stuff then. But it's one of those, yeah, you should have a weapon with you at all times for self-protection. I mean, whether you're in an apartment or a home, normally fire regulations require you to have at least one fire extinguisher, like in the kitchen area or something like that. It's one of those, well, why do you need a fire extinguisher? There's a fire department, but, you know, it's one of those, hey, if a fire breaks out, don't you want to put it out before it gets out of control? Well, same thing for self-defense. You should have a firearm for self-defense, so if the bad guy, thug, nigger, whatever, shows up and tries to do you bodily harm and relieve you of your property, you ought to be able to relieve him of his life, because that's what he does. He's a predator. Normally what you end up doing with predators, like we've had bears show up in downtown Bremerton, around they've shut in a whole apartment complex down because there was a black bear running around there a couple of years back. So it's one of those, they keep everybody, lock it down, keep everybody inside. Animal control shows up and relocates the predator to a safe and more natural habitat area. So maybe that's what we should be doing with our nigger predators. Relocate them back to their natural habitat. I don't mean the cities. I mean over back over to Africa, where they belong, in the jungle. So anyway, that's my little rant for this short segment here. That's my feelings on the matter. Hey, if anybody else wants to join in and chime in with their thoughts and opinion, I'm sure Mr. Covington will go and put you on. So, all right, comrades, have a good one. And wherever you are, should not be a gun-free zone. In other words, Harry. All right, have a good one, comrades. We'll catch you next time. This is the Trucker signing off.
They say, can you go? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm westbound, just watch a bandit run.
Okay, Lord Lucan's next up. We haven't had him on in a while. And before anybody emails me asking me, oh, Harold, why are you allowing horrible wicked conspiracy theory on here? Actually, Lord Lucan brought in some documentation, and there does seem to be a little something to this.
Now let us talk about the murder of 13 doctors who are working on the cure for cancer. The murder suspect is the United States government. The Japanese have found a cure for cancer. It is known as GCMAF. It means getting a weekly injection for a few weeks. However, doctors in this country who have been working on this cure have been deliberately murdered by the Food and Drug Administration. The radio program Coast to Coast has been doing the story on the murders, and about 13 doctors have been currently murdered. The website you can go to read about the murders is naturalnews.com. Most Americans are not prepared to admit that we live in a dictatorship, just as bad as living under a black African dictator, whereby political opponents are fed to the crocodiles. But it is long overdue to wake up to that reality. At some point, we are going to reach the straw that breaks the camel's back. The deliberate murder of doctors may be that straw. Nagalese is a chemical that is released by cancer to prevent the immune system from attacking the cancer cells. It is therefore detectable by means of a blood test. Chemo is a billion-dollar industry that obviously is prepared to commit murder to protect itself. GCMAF is illegal for curing cancer in both America and England. The president has obviously given the order to murder doctors. The Food and Drug Administration is under the rule of the president and could not have gone ahead with the murders without his approval. Congress has to have him impeached under the RICO Act that makes the president guilty of being an organized criminal. We need to contact all the doctors in this country as to what the Food and Drug Administration is doing to prevent a cure from cancer for American citizens. I recommend sending out a letter by means of an email to all in the Northwest Imperative to be sent on to all doctors in your phone list. Coast to Coast is waiting for the mainstream media to publish this story. They're going to have to wait a long, long time.
As I'm sure a lot of you know if you follow the news, the Hillary Clinton presidential campaign is really floundering because of email scandals and all kinds of other typical Clinton mess. And apparently the people running the campaign for Hillary are getting so damn desperate that they'll even buy advertising time on this show. So, in view of our really dire need for cash, I'm afraid I kind of yielded, so the following is a paid political announcement.
I am Rodham, hear me glow about the women who will vote for a commie pink lefty hippie head. I am Rodham, you can see Don't you bring up Benghazi, 'cause I don't care now what difference does it make. Oh, yes, I lied, 'cause the truth is hard for me. I guess my hands are tied, foreign bribes are ruling me. If I have to, I can say anything. I am wrong. I am invincible. I am right on. I am rotten, I was poor. Now I'm rich forevermore. I've been coasting on my Billy's long coattails. Scrub my server A to Z. Don't you bring up Benghazi. What difference does it make? I know I failed. Oh, yes, I lied, 'cause the truth is hard for me. Ran from sniper fire, Saudi bribes are ruling me. If I have to, I can do anything. I am wrong. I am invincible. I am right on. I am rotten, wrote a book, made hard choices, I'm a crook. Now Obama's left me dangling on the hook. Accomplishments, I have none. If I can, I'll take your guns. My emails are all clean, please take a look. Oh, yes, I lied, 'cause the truth is hard for me. Used to be dirt poor, foreign bribes are funding me. If I have to, I can say anything. I am wrong. I am invincible. I am Rodham. Ooh, I am Rodham. I am strong. I'm invincible. I'm invincible. I'm
invincible. Okay, now we're going to close this episode with some housekeeping or internal stuff, for which I apologize. I know that many of you prefer to hear me do what I did last week and actually read a speech that you can record and listen to on your earbuds or in your car in rush hour traffic, whatever. But the fact is that for the past 6 weeks or so, our hits to the website and this show have increased, and I'm pretty sure it's not all hostile left-wing bloggers or FBI agents apparently listening for their own entertainment, and that a lot of the increase is actually among the demographic we're looking for, i.e. ordinary white people, and some of the questions I'm getting via email are confirming this. Periodically, I need to use this show to address certain issues and convey certain information beyond our email list to a lot of new people and also some thousands of listeners who are basically too timid and frightened to contact the party and get on the email list, but who want and need to be kept in the loop on certain things. Yeah, every decision like this I make is a balancing act, and one of these days I could make a wrong call regarding talking about something on here that goes really bad. But that is the America of Barack Hussein Obama. Anything at all can suddenly and without warning just go way, way bad at any time. There is no security or stability for anyone anymore. I'm also getting a lot of questions over the past 6 weeks generated by our own community, to use liberal terminology, i.e. white people who have been hanging around on the internet bulletin boards for a while and who've been told for years that the Northwest Imperative is wrong and wicked and evil and not nice, and Harold Covington is an FBI informant who is also secretly the Grand Rabbi of Jerusalem, and how dare I compete with that nice Mr. Black and that nice Mr. Linder, and how dare I say all those horrible things about the movement's demigods from the 1990s. But what with all the recent uproar, a lot of our folks have decided to finally take the plunge and not allow themselves to be told how wicked and evil we are by the lords of V-Bulletin. And they actually go to northwestfront.org and check it out for themselves, and they like what they see. So, that's producing a number of case-specific responses. Okay, first off, you may remember in the past, I referred to a tipping point where all of a sudden, due to some specific event or just the osmosis of history, the word about the Northwest and the Northwest Front is going to break out of the Stormfront blacklist and the VNN boycott and spread throughout our tiny wee little movement. That word will be that finally there are for real PLEs starting up, although we call them PSAs here, primary settlement areas, and that you can come here to the Northwest and find real live people and not websites and email addresses. Well, after many years, that tipping point is finally starting to come in view. We've gotten a lot of new migrants this summer, and more are on the way. The Northwest cat is out of the bag now, at least as far as our own wee little crowd goes. All Don Black's horses and all Alex Linder's men are not going to be able to put the Northwest genie back in the bottle again. Apropos of that, once again, as I did a few weeks ago, I want to extend my sincere personal apologies to some of you prospective migrants out there who have contacted me or tried to contact me in the past and who feel that you have not received an adequate response, or I sent you an intro pack and you got back to me a few weeks and months later and I clearly couldn't remember you and I had no idea who the hell you were, so forth and so on. I know it's annoying and it makes me seem rude and dismissive and probably a little senile, which I'm going to stop making jokes about. Such is not my intention, I promise you, but I do have that ultimate excuse that everybody has in the 20-teens under the glorious reign of Barack Hussein Obama. I am so constantly and inescapably busy all the time, although I may not look like it. Now, that's one of the downsides with being a writer or a creative content producer, as we're called today. People think we just sit around and surf the internet and play on our computer all day, and from the outside, that's pretty much what it looks like, I would imagine. Most of the stuff I do has to be done bent over a computer keyboard for long hours to the exclusion of all kinds of things like exercise and recreation of any kind. And like Joseph Kerwin, I require solitude and unbending concentration so that I can shape and energize the essential salts. Capital S-A-L-T-E-S. That's an H.P. Lovecraft inside joke, which, since few of you know who H.P. Lovecraft was, will be completely lost on you, and I'm rambling again. Where was I? I've mentioned before that the 8-hour day and the 40-hour work week are now largely gone from American life. They're available only to government employees who have cubicle jobs courtesy of the ruling Democratic Party. Because our people here in the Northwest mostly have to work the, by now, standard American 60 hours per week in order to make the rent or mortgage, I have not been able to get the kind of 24-hour joined-at-the-hip clone of me at age 29 kind of help that I need to function properly. This is still a long way from happening and may not ever happen, but we won't get into that now. However, we do have enough quality people now resident in the homeland so that I no longer have to bear the weight of all this alone, and I am at long last getting some help. We are working up a system when I have the time to actually sit down in silence and hear myself think about it, whereby we will be assigning what amounts to migration case officers to individual internet contacts who display the intelligence and literacy and initiative we're looking for in new Northwest settlers. Yes, I know some of these people will be secret police or NGO informers for the ADL, the SPLC, or undercover reporters for the liberal left blogs and websites, that kind of mess. We will try to trip them up with the background checks, but that's hard when dealing with a completely unknown quantity. These case officers will be able to run proper preliminary background checks and provide a much more personal and hands-on approach, help you arrange your scouting trip to the homeland, and hopefully meet with you when you arrive on your scouting trip, so forth and so on. You'll hear more of this in time to come. Now, another question I am asked with increasing frequency in view of some of the things I've said in the organizational letters and in Northwest Observer is, why don't you make like the real Jim Baker and fundraise on the air on Radio Free Northwest and through podcasts and other audio and video and maybe have a telethon to raise money for the Northwest Front water slide or something? I've kicked that idea around and I don't completely rule it out in the future. One thing I've learned in the movement is never say never. However, you have to bear in mind that for all of my Jim Baker jokes, my fundraising style is very simple and not overly effective. I'm actually not very good at it, and that's a problem. I just say or shout or berate or sometimes plead to the effect of, hey, I got to have some money to pay for this or that or whatever the project is. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Every great white fearless leader in our tiny little movement has his own distinct fundraising style, and beginning back in the early 70s, I actually learned some of these techniques from observing some of the true greats along that line, notably Gerald L. K. Smith, David Duke, William Pierce, and the late great Matt Cale. Great in the sense that Cale could slip those shekels out of his supporters' pockets as adroitly as a master pickpocket. Cale may have had the personality of a shoe clerk and everything else, but damn, he was good at raising money. I'm tempted at this point to lay some Grandpa Simpson stories on you folks about great racist fundraisers I've seen in action, but I won't because of all the assorted unpleasant neighbors we have listening over the back fence who have no business hearing that kind of stuff. Plus, I need to wind this episode up, and if I started telling Grandpa Simpson stories, we'd be here all night. Basically, the reason I do not fundraise Jim Baker style by voice on Radio Free Northwest is A, I'm no good at it, and B, because I am one of those rare birds who still actually believes that this cause is a sacred calling and a divinely imparted duty. I feel that contact with the world of money and acquiring money cheapens and contaminates it, as indeed it does witness some of the things that have happened down through the past 6 decades. I am bloody embarrassed when I have to come to you guys with my begging bowl like some starving Marvin from Somalia. Frankly, I shouldn't have to ask. It shames me and pisses me off when I do. That shows, and the result is that the party barely survives. But survive we do, somehow. To quote the ineffable Sir Michael Jagger, you can't always get what you want, but if you try sometime, you just might find you get what you need. But our time is up now for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington, 98194, or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sasha Andaban. Freedom.